It's time for Mac Break Weekly. Alex and Renee and Andy are all here. We're going to talk about the latest Apple news, including the sad case of a widow who wants to unlock her iPad. Apple says you'll need a court order for that. It's all coming up next on Mac Break Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Mac Break Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 490, recorded Tuesday, January 19th, 2016. Nerds, the musical. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by Varidesk. Varidesk easily converts your existing desk or cubicle into a standing desk so you can switch between sitting and standing to stay fit and active at work. Learn more at Varidesk.com. That's Varidesk.com. And by Squarespace. Squarespace is the simplest way to create a beautiful website. Plus, with a developer platform, you can customize the code behind any Squarespace design. Enter the offer code MACBREAK and get 10% off. Squarespace.
You should.
It's time for Man Bag Weekly. No. It's time for Mac Break Weekly with a little bit about handbags. I'm Leo Laporte, joining us right now from the Chicago Sun-Times and the Inotco. Good to see you once again.
Thank you. It could be said that we are your leather boys. So to speak. I should put that through Urban Dictionary to find out.
I think you might know. You might not want to say that again. Also joining us from parts unknown, Renee Ritchie. Have you joined the Witness Protection Program? Where are you, Renee?
No, I'm in Mobile Nations Canada headquarters, a.k.a. Winnipeg, a.k.a. the frozen wasteland.
Oh, my God. Who would ask you to go to Winnipeg in January?
Kevin Michaluk, my glorious boss, lives here, and so he's decided to build out everything here. And so I went out of the ice cube tray and into the freezer, basically.
And it's
the Ministry of Tourism is probably not approving this as the brochure. Visit scenic Winnipeg.
It looks like a sensory deprivation tank with a little plant. Wait a minute, the plant's gone. Who stole your plant?
I'm in his office, which is really weird because there's a 4K display in front of me, two Apple monitors on either side, and I'm standing on a treadmill, and it's just very awkward.
That's all that matters. If you give my regards to the Ice Road Truckers, that's all.
I will.
Also in studio, here in the studio with us, it's Alex Lindsay of the Pixel Corps.
Hello.
Back from a pretty prestigious assignment, but I don't know if I can talk about it.
I can talk about it. I just couldn't talk about it before.
What were you doing?
So we were doing, we managed the live stream from the White House last week.
After the State of the Union?
It was on Friday with the YouTube experts.
YouTubers.
Yeah, the YouTubers.
Neat.
So we loaded into the East Room.
And there is a great picture that you're in, but you're hidden.
I'm hidden. There's a guy that looks like me.
Where is Alex?
He looks much taller and thinner than I do. It turns out to be my brother.
A 360 that your brother took with the president.
It was a 360 that Steve Grove from Google took.
Steve Grove took it. Okay.
And then my brother's just in the background.
Pretty cool to have the this as evidence. This is a Ricoh Theta, by the way. Still our favorite for 360-degree photography.
We are notorious for making a big mess, and here
you've made a big mess in the East Room.
You can see all the truss.
And as Alex was telling us before the show, the truss came within inches of scarring that chandelier at a priceless cost because, of course, Warren G. Harding.
Every time you ask, like, how much is something worth, they just say priceless.
Priceless.
Like, there's a whole lot of don't touch anything.
No, of course not.
We have people here that will move things for you, and we prefer it that way, you know, so.
So at no point did you screw into the walls or anything?
No. In fact, we asked, we were like, so the Washington painting, like, how much is that worth? Priceless. And we're like, okay, noted. Do not lean anything against the painting of Washington.
Yeah, that's Gilbert Gottfried did that in 1703. You can't mess with that.
So anyway, so it's
wow, look at
cool.
That. That is neat.
It was we shot those with the new Blackmagic cameras.
What is the
pretty happy
Oh, look
with.
How good the quality
yeah,
is.
Yeah,
holy cow.
Yeah.
Cinematographic.
God, the lighting is beautiful.
Yeah, it's
really lighting gorgeous. By Brent Bai,
yeah,
who lit this
he did
studio.
Our lighting here too.
Yeah, so Brent designed at all. And
but you know what's interesting? I'm looking at it. It's not that many fixtures. You've got two big keys. You've got a flood and
you've got a fill in the middle when they stood up. It's complicated because they're getting up and moving around. But you can see he added a little. He's got little accent lights going down,
down
the thing. So there's some cool. Brent thinks of everything.
But very minimalist, and yet it really looks spectacular.
Well, a lot of it has to do with, good cameras, which we're really happy. This is the first major event. We've been doing testing for about a month and a half on these cameras. These are the new Blackmagic production cameras, and we've been doing testing with them. This is the first major event that we did with them, and we put some serious lenses on them. So
did the White House provide the chairs?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Just thinking.
Yeah, we're not allowed to touch those either.
They look like Heppel White.
Yeah, they're old. So we have stand-in chairs until about a half an hour before the event, and then someone
bring
comes
in the
in
old
and
chairs.
Bring in really good chairs. So So
the president may not touch his bottom. May not touch anything less than 200 years old. It's a rule. It's in the Constitution.
It was actually the content was really good. There was a lot of great questions. Nice. The YouTubers had some really, really good things to ask, and it ran pretty smoothly. I would highly suggest if you have the time, checking it out.
Speaking of YouTube and politics, I guess Marquez Brownlee was one of the YouTube questioners on the Democratic debate a couple of nights ago.
I didn't
Isn't
work
that
on
cool?
that. Cool? Yeah, but I thought it was great that he was. I was waiting for, like, who is the crazy YouTuber they're going to put in. And when I saw it was going to be him, I was like, oh, my gosh, this is going to be
nice.
I still didn't watch it because it competed.
I didn't watch it either.
Steeler game.
Yeah, I had to watch the Steeler game too. I was busy doing something. Oh, I think TWIT. We want to welcome members of the North Coast Macintosh Users Group. NC Mug is a great, long-standing Macintosh Users Group. They're in studio with us today. Four of you? 31 years. Wow. Is the Mac that old? I'm feeling old now. Holy cow. For many years, they had a wonderful event just down the road, which they have stopped doing. As you know, unfortunately, users groups are getting smaller and they're getting older. And it's a shame that more people don't use them. And I think kids today, it's the problem.
Don't congregate, Leo.
Well, kids today don't feel like they need help, and they do. They need it more than the elders do, frankly, in many cases. I look at my kids. They don't know anything because they never had to do anything.
Right.
They have Snapchat groups.
Right. it works. Anyway, welcome. It's good to have you. And I've forgotten for a couple of weeks, when I was on the cruise on the Anthem of the Seas, we were walking down the massive mall, and a guy comes running up to me, and he says, oh, I'm a big fan of Mac Break Weekly. His name is John March. I said, John, you work on the boat. What do you do? He says, I'm the bassist. He plays in the band.
Nice.
And he's actually really good. So, John, I know you're listening. They're in the crew quarters, below waterline, as the but thank you for listening. It's his escape.
Right.
No, John. John is great, and I'm sure he has a very nice cabin on that ship because he's a very good bassist. So that's the show. Thank you, everybody. Goodbye. Is there anything to talk about in the Mac world? A few things.
Well, evidently, Apple is going to be moving all of their manufacturing to the United States.
I'm really happy that President Trump has finally done the right thing.
You didn't listen, Leo. It's the darn computers. The normal computers can stay in China, but all the darn computers have to move to the U.S.
I think it was a little stronger word than darn.
Evidently, this is a cleaner show than a presidential candidate.
Well, but he's famous for his outspoken, tell it like it is.
Something like that.
Point of view. And you know, the last thing we talked about with Donald Trump was him saying that he would be ready to call Bill Gates and shut this internet down.
Mm-hmm.
Now he says if he becomes
rein it in,
rein it in, yeah. Shut it down, rein it in. It's a fine line. Now he says if he becomes president, he will command, I guess, by regal decree,
edict.
Executive order.
You can't. There is no legal executive order.
I think it's technically from him. It would be an executive proclamation.
That Apple stop making its stuff in China and start making it here in the gosh darn U.S. of A. How do you feel as a Canadian? How do you feel about that?
Well, it's amusing because I remember previous generations where a candidate would make one mistake, one gaffe, say one inappropriate thing, and their entire career would be over. They would be shut down. And now he just says whatever, I don't even know if whatever comes to mind. It's just the most outrageous thing possible. And there's no consequences. We print it. We say it's not true. We say it's crazy. And people are like, yes, more. Please give me more.
That's so okay. He's speaking truth to power. And you got to love that.
I think he fundamentally doesn't respect his own followers to say stuff like this. I mean, it is pure idiocy. And it's not that he doesn't know. He just doesn't care. You know, I think that's the bottom line. He's got a bunch of folks that have an IQ of a median IQ of about 90. And he's, you know, playing to them, and they'll believe anything he says, evidently.
I was trying to figure out whether it's that where he realizes that all he has to do is get those monkeys to dance by using the trigger words that always make the monkeys dance, or whether he actually believes these things.
I don't think he does.
The fact that people start cheering means that he must be right. Well, there's a certain amount of if you are wealthy enough, you get to remove yourself from daily life. If you choose to do so, which means that you really do get completely detached from reality. So if let's say that you get an opportunity to interview a murderous drug lord, you get interviewed about the interview by an actual journalist with 50 or 60 years experience, you might find yourself lecturing that experienced journalist about what your form of journalism is.
You're talking
is
about
like.
60 Minutes.
I might be talking about Jeff Spicoli on 60
Jeff,
Minutes.
Which Jeff was Spicoli just, talking to Charlie Rose. That was something, wasn't it?
If he had been out and about in the real world, God bless him for his work in recovery in Haiti. It's not like he's a total, I'm not saying he's an idiot. I'm just saying that sometimes instances like this make you wonder, how often is this person actually out of the house?
But the thing is, that's actually a very good point. I mean, I think that that's the case, that Spicoli didn't really know anything about the real world. And
the fact that he's in front of him and he's using air quotes when he says journalists.
Right.
Okay.
However, I want to defend Donald Trump, believe it or not. I think he probably knows that it is not within the power of the president of the United States to command a sovereign company to move all of its production out of one country and into the United States. I think he probably knows that. And maybe he doesn't. Somebody will tell him you can't do that. But he's speaking to a larger subject, which I think not only his supporters, but a lot of us would agree that, you know, here's an American company that has offshored all of its manufacture.
Most of it.
The stuff that's made in Texas doesn't work so good, has been my experience.
Almost everybody's
done that. Right. Every piece of equipment on this table was made mostly in China, but certainly made outside the U.S.
Mm-hmm. It reminds me of that debate in the West Wing when it was Bartlet versus the other candidate. And the guy said, your taxes are too high. I'm going to fix that. And Bartlet's retort was, yeah, that's the 10 words, the first 10 words. Your taxes are too high. So are mine. The next 10 words are, how are you going to fix it? The 10 words after that, tell me that now and I'll drop out. And the problem is we only have the guys asking the crazy questions now. We don't have.
That's early.
We sort of devolved it down to the point where the parody, the stereotype, the worst of the worst, is the norm.
To further be fair, the current president, who I am a fan of, made a lot of promises during the campaign that he got in office and found out, I can't do that. I mean, these things happen. There's a big difference in what is said in a campaign and what is actually done once you get to the Oval Office.
There's just a certain level of being absurd, though. The absurdity of the proclamation of calling Bill Gates to have him rein in the internet.
That was a little nutty.
I'm going to make Apple
build their damn computers and things in this country instead of other countries. Computers and things.
It's just, you know, it's fine. I'm not worried. I don't think he's going to become president, but I just find him.
But it could. Like, appealing to the worst in people is a proven strategy for success, and that's a very scary proposition.
But what I'm saying is there's an underlying truth to what he's saying, which is that a lot of Americans have lost jobs because the manufacturing sector has left the country. And he's saying is, I understand your pain. I mean, that's the subtext of it. Now, admittedly, he probably knows, and certainly we know, you can't force Apple to start making stuff. You can't force anybody to bring back the manufacturing sector in this country. But that's a painful loss. That's something that there's a lot of nostalgia in it.
Yeah, I mean, basically. I think the issue is that I think that when you think about manufacturing, the problem is that if you don't have critical mass of enough people that can do what you need to do, there are a certain level of skilled positions that just there's not enough critical mass to do them anymore. So you could go through a 10-year program to try to build that. The problem is once you do that, you're still not competitive from a labor perspective, even paying them. Even if you pay them minimum wage or pay them whatever, it's the problem is that you couldn't.
We have had this conversation on the show about what if Apple made the iPhone? By the way, the iPhone is only assembled in China. A lot of its components, including most of it, or if not all of its software, are made in other countries. Most of its software is made in the U.S. Processors made in Korea. I mean, or Taiwan, some of them. So it's more nuanced than that, and I understand that. Well, but we've talked about it before, haven't we? That wouldn't it be great if
eventually they can. The talk that
he should be having is, here are the reasons why you can't manufacture an iPhone or a computer in the United States of America. And part of it is because we don't have the manufacturing capability to do that. And so his answer has to be, here's how we're going to bring more jobs from overseas back to America by making it easier to make that capability happen in the United States. Right. But then it has to be, well, if we give industries tax breaks and credits for building factories in the United States, what is going to stop them from using the money that they might be generating from this to try to maximize overseas production even more? It's a vicious cycle where it's a vicious election cycle where you say that we're going to try to make more jobs in America. The way to do that is by giving tax breaks to big corporations, but now you're accused of taking part in corporate welfare. I don't think that Trump is thinking on that level. I really do think that he knows he's got the monkey control push buttons in front of him. One of them is labeled Muslims. Another one is labeled immigration. One of them is labeled jobs, taxes, and he just pushes them to get the effect that he wants.
Of course, remember, even if he did tell that long story about all the things that need to be done, the news media wouldn't carry it because it's not a soundbite either. That was a great sound. That's a great soundbite.
Well, they carry it. I mean, there's journalism being done on all levels everywhere. The problem is that it's the exact same problem as with these campaign soundbites. The ones that really resonate are the ones that can be summarized as you say, a little soundbite. That doesn't mean that the actual journalism isn't out there and isn't being effective. It just means that the ones that you notice are the ones that have those BuzzFeedy sort of headlines.
All right. Well, let's talk about Jeb Bush then. I love this video. Jeb Bush is, of course, the Des Moines caucuses. The Iowa caucus is coming up in 2 weeks. He's talking to the Des Moines Register, and he hears a voice.
No,
Jesus, is that you?
It's your watch.
It's your voice.
My watch
Jeb.
Can't be talking.
Oh, yes, it can, Jeb.
It is. Is it my watch?
Yeah, it sounds like it.
I'll call you back. I've never had my bat phone be turned on. That's the coolest thing in the world. I know when it's ringing, but I've never actually used it.
Yeah, well, there you go.
Underutilized iWatch. Where were we?
I think that's a great moment. In fact, it makes me like him a little bit.
I know.
I feel like the same way, but I'm a grandpa too. Hello? What? Hello?
Remember when his dad was at a supermarket and he saw a barcode scanner for the first time?
Yeah.
Wow.
It's not that you can understand how a president might not be aware of what it's like in a supermarket over the past 3 or 4 years. You'd like him to be able to not be quite so Forrest Gump-ish at his astonishment of this magical spirit box.
Oh, I don't know.
We can all forgive him for calling it an iWatch because I think 70% of us are still calling it an iWatch.
Yeah, it's an iWatch.
I have to admit that I have accidentally answered on my phone, and then there's a lot of cursing.
It's a little weird when
I usually curse after that
wrist.
Because I do not like that. That's the one of the things. What I really want to be able to do is hit it and then have it answer on my regular phone, because it's this part. I'm not really. There's a lot of things I love about my iPhone, and doing this is not really one of them.
See, I love it. I think I'm in the future every time it happens. The other day, I was just testing battery life on the 6 Plus, and it lasted 2 days. But by the morning, it was just dead, so I had to plug it in, and the plug was in another room. And I was busy cooking, and my phone rang several times with family members, and I was just answering it while I was cooking, setting time. And it really felt like I was in the future. I just loved the ability to do it.
I probably shouldn't bring you all down talking about 7-year-olds working in lithium-ion battery mines in the Democratic Republic of Congo.
Yep.
We've talked about it. I mean, it's, you have to decide whether you're going to engage and try to change it, or you're going to wait and try to starve it out. So, I mean, it's a very
So here, actually, there is something happening with this. It's harder with the but there is something that's happening with diamonds, and I think we might have touched on it before, which is using so with diamonds, what they're starting to do for blood diamonds and so on and so forth is they are starting to identify the diamonds. They actually put a little code on it, as well as they every diamond is even after it's cut is unique. And figuring that all out, and then actually putting that into the blockchain.
Yeah, it's not going to work for this.
The problem is it doesn't work because of the raw material.
What they're doing is cobalt, which is eventually going to become part of a battery. There's no way to really identify cobalt as a commodity.
You can't, except for the fact that you can start building a chain of trust, you know, across these things where they're going to go into packages that are sealed, and there's this, you know, there's a process to it. I mean, those kinds of
fair trade lithium ion batteries could happen.
Well, I think people would, you know,
I'd buy them. Yeah, I'd buy fair trade coffee.
Yep.
And it's more, and it is more expensive, whether it should be or not. It's
But I mean, everything around us is largely made up of things that we don't want to know how they got made.
Yeah, this, this was a report from Amnesty, and of course they single out Apple, Samsung, and Sony. But the truth is, it's lithium ion batteries. Is there anything you have that's battery powered?
Well, they had that incident with shrimp over the holidays, where they identified that a lot of the shrimp was being done by in the sense slave labor in Thailand.
Right.
And all over the world, people buy the shrimp that is made by slave labor, and they do the same kind of investigation there. And it all comes down to, should the companies pull out and abandon support there, or should they stay engaged and try to force change in those areas? And they seem to do it on a case-by-case basis.
And I think almost all of these companies, including Apple, are constantly researching this and putting pressure on people and so on and so forth. There's a certain level of evolution that can happen at one time, I think, is part of the problem. It's really hard to, because it really is one of those things, like you walk away and then those people don't eat, you know, so you have to figure out the, you know, you have to figure out that balance of constantly, you know, improving it, which I do think that they have to do, but I don't think pulling the plug is necessarily the right solution.
All right. Something more up. Apple's going to kill iTunes Radio. I'm sorry.
Was it ever really alive, Leo? I mean, it was in the U.S. They put it in Australia, but it never really went anywhere.
So you never even saw it?
No, most of the world never got it. As soon as the Beats acquisition was in the pipeline, it looked like they just lost all interest in iTunes Radio.
Did you know there is such a thing as iTunes Radio, anybody?
I've heard of it.
Yep.
I haven't actually heard it. I've heard of it.
It's if you click the radio tab in iTunes, you'll see Beats 1. That's not what we're talking about. It's this stuff below it, featured stations, styles of stations, and all of this is Pandora. Well,
those so those we have, those are pretty much international, but there was a separate iTunes Radio program. You could, if you were an iTunes Match subscriber, you'd get it without ads. If you weren't, you would get it with ads, and it was almost like a Pandora sort of
I'm looking at right now, the
those are radio stations within iTunes, but those are not iTunes Radio. Apple had before Apple bought Beats, they were going to try to compete by doing their own product, which was iTunes Radio. And the idea was to roll it out internationally. And it got as far, it launched in the U.S. A long time later, it showed up in Australia. And they just had a heck of a time rolling it out.
So this is going to stay in iTunes and this is going to stay free. What I'm looking at right now, where it says Latin pop, sports and news, that's all, because these are real radio stations.
No, these are sort of like smart playlists. I mean,
this is smart playlists. It's Pandora. Kinda.
Sort of, but it's not the level. iTunes Radio was a level of sophistication.
Would I find iTunes Radio?
On your iPhone. I think it's still in the music app, but I don't have an American iPhone.
You see why they got rid of it.
Well,
because A, it's really confusing. And B,
I wanted to do this story because I didn't even know what it was. So they didn't get rid of it. They're just going to, you only get it. Everybody in the North Coast Macintosh users group is now looking for it on their iPhone. You don't.
What are they talking about?
You won't get rid of it, but you won't get it unless you pay for Apple Music.
Right.
And that may be more because of deals with the record companies. I don't know why they did it, but irony is it's not the radio button.
It sounds like it actually is connected to the end of iAds. So the financial support for this was connected to iAds by end of lifing iAds. End of life's the financial support for the free stations. I believe that those two are
tied together.
Tied together, yeah.
I'm still listening to Roger Whitaker from last week. Thanks a lot.
Likewise.
Where would I find this out? Well, you don't know. Who knows?
I don't
anybody?
Know. I've never seen it.
I do think it's almost everything except for Beats 1. I think it's like all the stuff you see there is all, I don't think you're going to get access to any of it unpaid except for Beats 1.
Star Wars soundtrack selections.
I see I have that in Canada. I don't have iTunes Radio, so that can't mean.
Okay. So you have that. But we really have to do some detective work to figure out what it is exactly.
Here's mine. It's super confusing.
Yeah, you have the same exact same thing.
And there's no iTunes Radio in Canada, so this is still available absent iTunes Radio.
But it hasn't been turned off yet, has it?
No, but he doesn't have it. He's never had it.
Never had iTunes Radio.
Because he's in Canada.
Right.
So that can't be it.
It's very confusing. But do you have Apple Music?
Yes.
Okay, so I'm confused. Yep.
But then then there's what happened to streaming radio stations that disappeared with the last major update.
Right.
And now if you
those
want
did
to
not, by the way, disappear. They just got hidden deeply under a menu.
Yeah, you now have to go under a menu, and you also have to now actually know the URL that you're trying to stream. Like, is the directory still there?
Yeah, Adult Contemporary.
Yeah.
There it is. New Millennium Sound, ABC Radio. This is. But I was told by somebody in the know, what is the term you're supposed to use? Somebody with knowledge of Apple's plans, that this was going to disappear, but it's still here in my current iTunes. But to get to it, you have to go to the .. menu where we live, where podcasts live, and then go down. Well, it was here, but I guess because I'm in it, it's not there anymore.
People familiar with the matter.
People familiar with the matter say, go to the .. menu and then internet radio. But this is streaming radio. This is not what they're talking about either, right?
Well, and I could be completely wrong, but I remember iTunes Radio being more like Pandora, where you had a better sophistication. Like, you could like and unlike songs, and it had ads at an ad level and a free level. And it was a productized thing. And this is just sort of like...
Anybody in the North Coast Macintosh users group know?
I do. I still have it.
You find it? Yeah.
You have it. It's buried in iTunes. Where do we go? And you're looking at your iPhone right now. Walk me through it.
But do you have Apple Music?
Yeah, I do have some of those playlists right now.
So are you a subscriber to Apple Music?
No.
Oh, interesting. Well, they haven't killed it yet, maybe.
Right. But you're only seeing it. You're seeing nothing, right? You're just seeing Beats 1?
I'm not the same, but I'm getting it under radio, but I'm getting it out of my music.
This is really great radio.
I see my... Oh, Lord above.
This is why.
So do I. Yeah. Patrick Delahanty. No, but we. Is that it? You're using it.
But it hasn't been turned off yet, so we wouldn't know. But I do believe it's everything, but I think essentially everything that.
Yeah, that's
is going to. That not Beats 1.
This is the same. No, that's what we've been saying is we don't think it's that because Renee's getting
I'm
going to
look
Canada.
It up. And it doesn't have all the interface.
It's not on the desktop.
Damn your eyes, you're making me launch the iTunes app, which is something I try not to do.
Okay, so this is why, by the way, I avoided this story on Twit. I avoided this story on iOS today because I didn't understand it. What are they killing? Apple has announced that the ad-supported iTunes radio stations available in the U.S. and Australia are going away January 29th. Beats 1 will be the premier free broadcast going forward. All other radio station features, i.e. the algorithmic stations like Charting Now or Pop Workout, will require an active Apple Music subscription. So I'm looking. So still unclear, by the way. We'll find out January 29th.
And again, I think this has to do with the fact that they're turning off the ads.
Where are you playing that? Is that Beats? Is this me? Sorry, somehow Meghan Trainor snuck into my stream. I'm so sorry. There remains confusion on the subject. We'll find out January 29th.
When whatever it is goes off.
It says radio.
Yeah.
But Renee's of the opinion that since he has it in Canada, it's not.
Yeah, but there was a distinct iTunes radio product.
Right.
That you could do stuff with.
And we do know that the we know what iAd is,
kind of. I didn't see that very often either, which is probably why they're shutting it down.
So this was a way to buy ads in apps, right? And an app developer would put an iAd in the app as a little banner at the bottom of the screen, and or maybe a bigger banner.
It would help get them attention on their own apps.
So mostly was it app developers buying iAds?
there were different products. Like there was one, the original iAd service that Steve Jobs announced, where it was like $1 million and a company could make these beautiful ads and those could be circulated. But there was also a program where developers could essentially buy iAds for their apps and then their apps would show up inside other apps. And it was a way for people to get sort of some attention on them.
Right. Anyway, that is sort of going. Hey, wait a minute. Here's a thank you to the chat room. Listen to Apple Music Radio. That's Beats One. On-demand radio stations. And if you have a subscription to Apple Music, you got an unlimited skip. Listen to on-demand stations without ads and add songs you like to your library. So I think, Renee, whatever it is that you're getting, that's what we were... This is it, right?
I think you had a more sophisticated version where you had all the ability to skip and to do a whole bunch of things.
No, you can't skip unless you have...
I'm looking for...
Oh, wait a minute. It says... Okay, wait a minute. You don't need an Apple Music membership to listen to Apple Music Radio, but if you have an Apple Music membership, you can listen to on-demand music stations with no advertising on one device at a time. To listen on your iPhone, open the music app. No, what we were showing is apparently what they're killing. I don't know what you have, Renee. What you have is a cheap imitation.
Yes, I have a very basic version.
There's a what? There's a slider. Isn't it strange that we are so confused about this product? But this is, you know,
It's Apple Music, so it's a music product by Apple. It's a service from Apple, so that's pretty much par for the course, is it not? I was talking to someone the other day, and he just says conversationally, I've got all my photos in the cloud, I think. And I said, oh, so you're an iPhone user?
Yeah. Okay, now
that one works.
I'm on the ice planet Hoth, and you're saying there's a slider here somewhere. I don't know what's going on. It's very
soothing.
I don't know. All right, I don't know. See, then there's a radio station there too. I don't know what this is. All right. Well,
can it be 2007 again? Remember, like we're still like on the big high from the iPhone, and Apple's doing everything just right, and we had faith that if we didn't understand something, it made sense. We just got it wrong.
You know, they could have, really, now I'm convinced, not announced this.
Yes.
Yeah.
And no one would have. There would have been January 29th would come and go without a word. It would be an interesting test. I think you're right. It must be related to the iAds demise. Now, are they going to do something else?
No, it looks like they're just going to get rid of it.
This actually makes sense because if you're going to be the privacy company,
it does. It makes
you don't
sense.
Really want to be selling ads,
especially if you weren't making any money at it.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, well, this wasn't very successful. And they're pushing so much, you know, this means that they're really, what they can say when it's closed, you know, is that we're really the company that we don't care anything about you. We're not looking, we're not interested, we're not, you know, like we just, you know, all we care about it is that you have your privacy. Because it does seem to be the thing that they're going to definitely push hard is that their users have the most privacy.
It also lets them have a little bit of a higher ground when they're talking about, products like Apple News, where they're saying if you want to use our ad product, that's fine. We won't block. We won't let anybody block our ads,
right?
But as you say, if it were making Ghostbusters level money, they'd find a way to preserve people's privacy or message. Mm-hmm.
It does set up the situation where they could get money. They could buy. Killing it when they're killing it, it does set up a situation where they could, rather than just making it available to block ads, really aggressively go after blocking ads even in the apps. Yeah. You know what I mean? You know, so the thing is they could get much more aggressive about ad blocking if they get out of the business. So it's
exactly.
So, and then that just cripples the other ad networks.
Well, not necessarily until they counter move.
Or they put it into the terms of use. For the developers,
well, not only that. It's easy enough for everyone who has an ad network to adjust their code so that if their ads are being blocked or the cookies are being denied, then guess what? You don't get content, and just make that here's what we expect of you as the reader and as the viewer of our free content. Right. So it's not as though this is going to solve the problem. Something that even that big wouldn't solve the problem. It would only solve the problem temporarily until a business that makes a lot of money, that's well motivated to continue to make money from this business on something that people are not willing to do without, just simply adjust a little bit.
Well, the question is whether the question is whether Apple is pushing more towards a subscription model for all that content. So we want to push you away from using free ads and more towards paying $1 a month or whatever, or paying into an ad network like, you know, or paying for it. You know, that's the whole thing is do we move you to, you know, towards that process?
They can push, but Apple is Apple, but they're still only Apple. You know,
and I mean, they look at the news product,
they don't control the up and they don't control the up and the down. So.
If you look at Apple News, they're not backing away from the ads there. They're just backing away from Apple being a source of the ads and giving that over to the individual companies. And sort of Apple becomes the gateway. It becomes like an API layer instead of an ad provider. And I don't think they're going to do anything to get rid of ads in Apple News, because that's sort of how the entire product has been built and positioned. Right. So as long as they have something running, it would be hard for them to remove it from apps if they're not removing it from something like news, which could be core to their service eventually.
Plan to be in New York City starting March 31st because Nerds, the musical, opens. The Bill versus Steve musical.comedy.
Fiddle Nerds from Harvard are we.
Philadelphia Daily News says, Nerds rules in a rocking, rollicking send-up. Smart, inspired performances any theater fan should enjoy.
We are the very model of a modern major system.
Are you going to take the train up and go see it, Andy?
I don't know. I might. There's a lot of theater in New York City. I might not get to it right away. You get $25 rush seats to the Metropolitan Opera after noon. On second thought, though, if they just advertise this with a tagline, come on, you're not getting tickets to Hamilton.
We're just down the street.
Just accept it and see our show instead.
I think as our man on the street on the East Coast, it's your duty to see it and to give us a proper review.
I think you're right. I think, and as a journalist, I think that they should send me comp tickets.
Will it help? Does it help?
And backstage.
Does it help orchestra. If I tell you that it's being written by Jordan Allen Dutton and Eric Weiner, who wrote Robot Chicken? Does that help?
Yes.
Oh, Leo. Okay.
They also did a 1990 play called The Bombity of Errors and a hip-hop adaptation of Shakespeare's The Comedy of Errors. Oh, no, that was it, The Bombity of Errors.
So it's not Pirates of Silicon Valley, the musical. It's an entirely original construct.
No.
And as the Mac Press, do we now get to do lots and lots of like blog posts about, once again, I mean, Steve Jobs never danced publicly. Okay. Secondly,
Bill Gates did, by the way. I've danced with Bill Gates, and I know why Steve Jobs never danced publicly. Now.
Who led?
It was across the room. Our eyes locked. He bit his lower lip, sticked his butt out.
He threw the invisible lasso at him. Did he come to you? Or
no, he did the Bat-toosie.
Is the Bat-toosie involved this?
Yes. Exactly.
How do I know that?
It's shared knowledge.
Part of our rich cultural shared tapestry.
As Ars Technica points out, this happened this summer. Just because the musical's called Nerds, don't think you can do what this guy did at a Broadway play called Hand to God. Apparently his iPhone was dying just as the play was starting, so he crawled up onto the set and plugged his phone charger into the set, even though it was a fake plug.
Well, you can't blame a man for that.
That's how desperate people become when their phone is dying.
That's a good ad for Mophie. They should license that video.
I was just thinking that. I was like, you know, I had that thought, and then I realized, wait a minute, I have a battery in my bag.
The show hadn't started. But the crew did stop the pre-show music and have to make an announcement that you may not climb up on the stage.
Yeah.
I did stumble across this YouTube video of rehearsal.
Let's see. Oh, is this for Nerds the Musical? Okay, Bill Gates and Steve Jobs comparing dance moves.
A man uses the machines you build to.
Is this one of those them rap battles?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I believe he's throwing shade, if I'm not mistaken.
Uh-huh. There he goes. He is doing the lasso.
There you go.
You called it, Andy. Write these raps for you too? All right. That's enough of that. Thank you very much.
My eyes. My eyes.
I you know what? We're going to, you know, it's going to be a huge hit. It's going to be the next Hamilton, and we're going to sit here feeling bad that we dissed nerds the musical.
I'm just glad that entertainment found two more roles for white guys.
Let's take a break on that note and come back with more. Andy Iannacco's here, Chicago Sun-Times. When we come back, we're going to talk about where to get your next leather bag.
Nice.
We already brought the site to its knees. Also here, Mr. Alex Lindsay from the Pixel Corps. And from sunny Winnipeg. How cold is it in Winnipeg, Renee Ritchie?
It's the coldest place in Canada right now. I'm going to double check. It's gotten much warmer. Yesterday was actually cold, but it's minus something horrendous.
Oh.
Pull up the weather app and see.
The only thing that comes to mind when I hear the word Winnipeg is James Hetfield of Metallica saying, "You don't ever want to go to Winnipeg."
Minus 16 right now.
Oh, it's not that bad.
Fahrenheit or centigrade?
Oh, I don't
Celsius.
Remember. Probably so. I don't know. Probably Celsius.
Well, doesn't help it makes a difference.
Next, negative 16, I think it's still above zero.
Yeah. It's not zero yet. That's
nope, that's Celsius. In Fahrenheit, it is 3 degrees.
3 degrees. That's practically warm. Why, I remember a balmy spring day in Toronto when it was 4 degrees. I couldn't stick out my tongue because it hurt.
Minus
and I realized it was because it was freezing.
Yeah, you go outside and the liquid in your head starts to freeze.
It starts to freeze.
Yep.
Rapidly. Many people like to sit all day. We're a sedentary bunch, we geeks.
Yes.
Good for you. In fact, the Mayo Clinic shows sitting puts you at greater risk for a wide range of health problems, including obesity, increased blood pressure, and high blood sugar. That's why I and many others have taken to standing at our desks. And if you've been interested at all in a standing desk, I think Renee's actually at a standing desk. He said he was on a treadmill. I've got a suggestion for you. Veridesk. This is an easy way to convert your desk at work, even if you're in a cubicle, to a standing desk, or actually standing and sitting, your choice, without having to get boss permission. That's because the Veridesk sits right on top of your existing desk or cubicle and turns it into a standing desk. There's no assembly, no installation, no boss approval, and it's a lot more affordable, too. It comes fully assembled. You just pull it out of the box, put it on your desk. Put your monitors and gear on it, too, because it's spring-loaded. That means you can literally raise it with just a few fingers. It's a simple thing. You just use the handles on either side. The spring-loaded boost mechanism makes raising your monitors and keyboard effortless. It's also adjustable. There are 11 different height settings. I really like that. And prices start as low as $175 with free shipping in the continental U.S. If you've been wanting a standing desk, this is the easiest way to try it right now. Lifehacker said Veridesk was one of their 5 best standing desks. It's also been featured on Product Hunt and Gear Patrol. And we've been using one. We have the, if you want to get the same one we do, which is really great, we have the Veridesk Pro Plus 36 here at the Brick House. And actually, people fight to use it now. Everybody wants one. It's a really great idea. You know, our editors are sitting, they're slumping all day. I feel bad for them. And it's nice to give people that opportunity. Here's the deal. Go to Varidesk.com and check out their wide range of adjustable desks for your desk or your cubicle, your home or your office. And make sure you tell them, "I heard it on Twit. I was listening to Mac Break Weekly." Varidesk.com. Veridesk. We thank them for their support of Mac Break Weekly. Don't know if it's related to our discussions about Apple's offshoring of their tax consequences, but employees at the headquarters in Cork had to evacuate following a bomb threat. There you see all 12 employees standing around.
I think 4,000, I think.
No, it's more. It's 4,000 workers. It's not really any news, but there it is. It's not like we're rich in news this week. Still waiting for my Apple Watch 2, although I have to say I've been starting. Who was it? Was it you, Renee? I think it was. It said just press record, recommended just press record.
Yes.
that has kind of revitalized my interest in the Apple Watch. I made it a complication on my watch face, and I can now just tap it and immediately start recording. And I used it the other day. A kid came in to interview me, and he was going to write everything, tap everything into his iPhone. I said, let's just record that. I was able to record it. It showed up not just on my watch, but also on my phone instantly and on iCloud instantly. And I just emailed it to him, the audio file.
What Leo's trying to say here is that all of the future Twit podcasts are going to
be recorded on my watch. It's kind of amazing. So thank you, Renee. That was a great pick.
I got that from Serenity. And it's funny because Apple did not make a voice memo app for the Apple Watch, but they built the API for it so anybody could just package it up and make
smart.
The voice recorder, and so this one turned out really well.
It really did. And so I'm going to take back, because I've been saying bad things about the Apple Watch, but now simply because of that, and because it's, of all the heart rate monitors I use, it's the most accurate one.
It's just a couple things. Like, I have Aussie on my watch now, and just having all the Aussie stuff there is fantastic, because I don't have my phone with me all the time.
Right. Aussie is another great reason. You put in a glance, right?
Yeah.
And you just slip over, and there's your stuff. Yeah. So now I'm thinking, well, what would they put in an Apple Watch 2 in March if they would announce it? Although I think just because they announce it doesn't mean it'll be available in March. What would they put in it that would make it something I would trade up for?
Well, their bigger thing is not getting you to trade up. It's getting the person who hasn't bought an Apple Watch yet to be interested in
sense.
It.
Yeah.
And the rumor is like it's an Apple S2 computer on a chip because it can get faster and more energy efficient. There's continued rumors of a FaceTime camera, although I don't know what my level of interest would be for a FaceTime camera on the Apple Watch. It'd be nice to have, but not a must have. And then there's just a few other hardware things they could do, like a better Wi-Fi system so that it can access directly Wi-Fi better than it does right now.
I stand corrected. Authy does not have a glance capability. I wish it did. But it does.
I just pop open the app and switch across.
Yeah, it launches fairly fast.
Yeah.
That's one thing I would do with that watch, too, is watch OS 2 did not fix this fundamental problem of slow launching, I think.
What watchOS did is they took – so originally you had the interface on the watch and the extension, because it's built on the extension system from iOS 8, was on the phone. And all they did is move the extension part over to the watch. Right. So it's still an extension of the app that lives on your phone, and it's still bound by the processing power of the watch. And that didn't get any faster. So you can have native code on the watch, but the watch itself isn't any faster than it was before. You remove some of the interruptions that happen with communication, but nothing that involves just CPU processing gets fixed.
And is there a reason why, so for instance, you know, with messages, it's super easy to respond and not for almost anything else. You know, like you know, it's is that something that the developers just don't have access to certain things, or they just haven't done it? So if someone sends me a text message, you know, I get messages, I can just sit there and tap it, say it, it all goes back. It's very fluid. But if someone Slacks me, for instance, I have to do, you know, I can look at it, but I can't really respond to it in the same way. Is that a limitation of the API?
Well, there's that same quick sheet that you have for messages response, which lets you dictate a response or quickly send an emoji. You know, that basic sheet that you see on messages is an API. It's available to
any developer not using
on
it.
Any app. Yeah, so they could build that in. They do that for messages now. It depends on how complicated the system is, but as long as a notification comes in, they can have a button that says reply, and they just pull up the standard sheet for that, the same as messages.
I just want to know who to blame, because it's really frustrating.
Yeah, I'm just hoping for software refinements more than anything else. If there's anything hardware I'd love to see, it would be whatever it would take to make it possible to have a true ambient display so that you don't necessarily have to turn your watch in order to get the time.
There is a certain way that you use when you have an Apple Watch, you can kind of do a certain thing with your wrist to make sure that it turns on, which I'm sure will create RSI eventually.
Because there's just so many times where this is something I appreciate about the Android Wear watch, that if you turn your wrist, it'll go into like the full mode display. But if after a second or two, it'll go back into the sort of low power mode where all it's showing you. I'm going to try to I don't think I can show you without activating again. But yeah, that didn't work out well. But the thing is, I can tell it's 3:06 p.m. even without having to wake up the display, because we all have history with watches where I really want to know what time it is, but I don't want to make it look that obvious with these people I'm with that I need to know what time it is. These little things that you miss.
I have to be able to – just being able to design the watch faces would be the only feature that I really want.
I can't think of anything that I'd like to see them do in hardware, really. It's all about software. And it really is –
And many of them are really fundamental things I'd like them to rethink. I mean, it's easy to see that I think Apple really put most of their effort and time and energy into making sure the hardware was at least 95% where they wanted it to be. Because I know that software is something you can improve pretty easily compared to deciding that you needed to have an extra button on this display or that you needed to have more RAM available or more CPU power. I think they got it, the hardware, pretty much as right as they could have gotten it. I would like to see the digital stem more useful, but otherwise I'm pretty happy with the watch as it is. I can't imagine what you use a camera for.
I agree, though, an always-on display would be so nice.
Yeah.
If Android Wear can do it without killing the battery.
There was a couple things, like Georgia was pointing out, too, that she wears a lot of suits to work, and it doesn't quite fit underneath the cuff of her suit. A little bit thinner would be better for her, at least. And the ambient display as well, because it's much more subtle than taking a phone out of your pocket.
Right.
But still doing a big flip movement, especially if like her, you're in a therapeutic situation and you don't want the client to think you're bored listening to them. So you want to be able to just glance down subtly and see if the time is good.
Yeah.
Or even just put sometimes you explicitly take your watch off and put it on the desk or put it on a table. Yeah.
And that would be so cool. And you can't do that with the Apple Watch, right?
Yeah, and that too is so many of these things are just the social interface that watches have had for the past 100 years. That there are times if you take your watch off and put it on the desk, you're quietly saying that there is some sort of hard out that I'm looking at, but not so much that I'm going to be staring at the time all the time.
Right.
But you're right, Renee. Apple already blew my mind when they introduced this device with such a small case to begin with. If they were to make it even thinner and make it even smaller and make it even more attractive as a daily wear sort of thing, that would be the standout feature of any new Apple Watch 2. So big that you would almost imagine that they would put aside every other new feature and idea in favor of just making the case smaller and making it easier for someone to integrate this into their wardrobe and their lifestyle.
Yeah, the thing with them is the physics. Like, as far as my understanding is that right now the Apple S1 runs at the thermal limit for that device. So they have to come up with some pretty fancy engineering to get it smaller. And because people want the apps to be faster and they want to... Customers are awful. You know, we want it to be thinner and lighter with a double-length battery life, with no bezels. And so with the Apple Watch, we want it thinner, we want it lighter, we want it to fit under this, we want it to last for 7 days. So being able to make an Apple S2 that is more efficient so that it can process things faster but also doesn't take up as much space. And then my biggest request is please don't change the band mechanism because that to me is going to cost me more money.
Apple would never change the design of a plug or connector all new everything.
They gave me 10 years with a 30 pin dock. Just give me 10 years with
how many bands do you have now?
15 maybe.
Do you make sure that you wear a different one every day, or?
You know, I did until I got the Hermes, and then it's just the Hermes to me is it's a little bit more trouble to switch, so I don't switch it as often. But I still switch it when I now that you can pair two watches with Apple with watchOS 2.2, it's just easier to take the other watch that can much more quickly swap.
All my third party cheap bands broke, so I'm back to the Milanese loop. What is your Hermes your favorite band?
Yeah, it's just because it's so it's just kind of unique, and it's also really, really like you don't notice the difference. And I think Serenity did an article on the Fomez bands you can get on Amazon that are like $30.
Yeah.
But they're not double layer, they're not double stitch, they're rough on the back, and they if you want the look but you don't care about how it feels, they're fine. But even Apple's leather strap is really, really good. They're expensive, but they spared no expense in the sourcing of the leather and the materials and the finish and the workmanship they put into them, so much so that there were massive delays in shipping a lot of them.
You don't have to get the Hermes watch to use the cuff, though.
They sell them as a package. So you buy it.
So you had to buy the Hermes watch?
Yeah.
You can't just buy the cuff?
But, Leo, again, if you go to Hermes.com, it's the cuff that costs way more than any watch does. So, I mean, it's a different world. But I love the Apple Steel link bracelet to me is terrific. And it's one of those things that shows the value of Apple entering
a
product category because my previous watch, my normal watch, I can't change the links. I have to go to a jeweler or get one of those super jewelry sets that people like Vince Nguyen or John Biggs use. And I'm just not good enough to do that. And with this, I press a button and I change the links.
Yeah, I do like that. Yeah, that's pretty sweet.
That's cool engineering, but number one, how often do you – You don't go through so many like fitness and weight fluctuations that you need to change the size of your wristwatch. And secondly, those tools cost all of. I did buy a knockoff stainless steel bracelet for my Apple Watch. And the kit costs about $7.50. It breaks after the third time you use it, but you're only going to need to use it like once, maybe twice, as you make your first mistake in guessing what it is. So it really is beautiful. I will say that it does look like if I were to spend $500 on a stainless steel bracelet, I would not. It looks like something that costs a lot of money. It's not just the links; it's also the clasp. I think that works nice. Whether it will deliver $500 worth of value to every user is something else entirely, but that's up to the individual.
All right.
Yeah, I played with mine a lot. I made it too loose, and then the heart rate thing didn't work, so I made it tighter, and then it was too tight. So over the course of 2 weeks, I did adjust it several times. I never had to go anywhere to do it. I just had to pop stuff in and out. And to me, I really liked that, because previously when I did that with a regular watch, I just didn't care. It didn't fit right. I'd already gone there once, and I just gave up at that point.
Somebody's saying they really like the pad and quill cuff.
Yeah, that was a really nice
one. Have you tried that one?
Serenity has those.
At least you don't have to buy an Hermes watch to use it.
No, and they come in variety of colors, too, which the Hermes cuff doesn't come in. That's the nice thing about it, is once you make a system where you can change the straps, a lot of different companies can bring things in the market at every price point, at very different tastes and fashions. And it really, to me, increases the value of having it.
That's why I give Apple a lot of slack for this. I think there's a limit to how foolish you can think some of these really super expensive Apple bands are, because if Apple had made the connecting mechanism proprietary and tried to make sure that no one else could even try to bring a knockoff to market, then it would be ridiculous to have a $500 stainless steel band and a $150 leather band. But Apple, I think, is quite aware that they will make the high-end stuff that they like to make that really excites them as designers, and they're perfectly fine with other people making the $20, $30, $100 versions of it for people who either A, don't have $500 to spend on stainless steel, or like me, will see these two things side by side and say, why is that one costing $400 more, even though it doesn't look as nice to me as the $100 version?
Well, I also think it's really interesting that maybe I've been missing it, but I mean, I just didn't think about how much customization you do with the watch band until the Apple Watch. I mean, when I bought a watch, it was just the watch, because a lot of times the way you would put it together was so complex, and taking it apart and putting it back together you would never think about putting. I mean, I never thought about really customizing my watch bands until you could just slide it on.
Yeah, but you don't have 15 watch bands, do you?
No, that's not silly at all. I love that idea that even I myself had three or four different Apple Watch bands. Some of them were just to test things out, but it's also because you wear the plastic one because it's summer and spring and you sweat into the damn thing and you don't want to get everything gunked up. But then you have I have that red leather band that I only wore once or twice for a couple of like dressier occasions. The Milanese loop that I wore when it wasn't going to be quite a sweaty day. It's great to be able to swap these things out and have three or four different watches, not just three different styles like that. So I think that it's silly when I wrote my review that I can't believe I'm actually taking this much time to talk about a watch band, but it really is that interesting of a system, and it is an interesting way to enhance the entire platform.
Ladies and gentlemen, I give you your stars of Nerds, the musical. All right. I'm actually curious what you think about this, because it is a Canadian story from the CBC. A widow in Victoria says Apple says you have to get a court order to access your husband's password. She provided Apple with, all of the information, death certificate and so forth. But Apple said, I'm sorry, we can't help. You've got to go to court. She gave Apple serial numbers. She gave them the will, the notarized death certificate. And they said court order. That's probably a standing policy, I would guess.
Yeah, I mean, this stuff is all so interesting because it is so new. And we saw this a couple of years ago with inheritance rights for iTunes libraries, where people wanted to take over the iTunes library, and it was unclear about whether you could transfer the license, and the companies weren't sure they wanted their music or their movies to be transferred. All of this is brand new. And from Apple's point of view, this is probably a way to abdicate responsibility, because if someone is ever tricked into providing this information, they don't want to be sued, because the worst thing is, you gave away my password. I wasn't really dead. You got tricked. I'm suing you now for $18 billion. Right. And this way, it's very easy to say, the court issued an order. It has nothing to do with us. We were merely following a court order. Eventually, I think it'll end up being similar to what it is with banks, where you have to go to a notary, you present the documents, they present you with the files, the same thing that you'd give to the note to the bank to get access to the accounts, to the safety deposit box, and to the other personal property of the deceased person. You would present to Apple, to Google, to Facebook to get access to those accounts. But we just haven't litigated this stuff yet. And that's how it works. Sometimes it happens. You go to court. There's an appeal. There's a bunch of decisions. There's a precedent set. And then very slowly, it sort of migrates its way into law.
It's not just about privacy.
It's not just about privacy. It's also about estate law. The executor of an estate would, for instance, get the right to go into someone's office and take possession of papers and stuff like that and decide what the disposition of that stuff should be. You can't have a land rush where every relative thinks that if you have three people who think that they have a right to all the photos and all the things that are on mom's and dad's stuff or the passwords to certain accounts, so they can basically move things out of those accounts before things are taken control of it. It's just like the playground taunt of, yeah, well, you go and prove it. And going and prove it is the equivalent of going to court and having a judge decide what's right and what's wrong. Nobody knows until there is that precedent established.
In this case, he had an iPad. She says they shared. She had the unlock code, but she didn't have the Apple ID password, and she wanted to play her game on the iPad. And Apple said, "Well, you have to give us the ID," as often happens on an iPad. And she, you know, the password, she couldn't do it. Apparently, the upshot of this is she went to a group called Go Public, which is a consumer advocacy group, and they contacted Apple. Apple apologized for a misunderstanding and offered to help solve the problem without a court order. It has not yet been resolved. I think it is more complicated than, hey, he died. It's our iPad, and I want to be able to get into it because.
I mean, in these
days,
it's
not stated in the will. You don't get access to everybody's property, and this is why. You know, going forward, for people who listen to this show, you really ought to make a plan for this kind of stuff.
Yeah, definitely making a data plan is important because I think that it does put the company in a very complicated situation to, you know, just provide this stuff without a court. The reason you want a court order, as Renee was kind of alluding to, is that let them hash that out. Just tell us what you want to do. They're not trying to make it harder. They're just like, we just want the legal side of this to be hashed out. And some, you know, and then when you come to us,
they're not questioning his death. Yeah. It's not that. It's just, well, do you have the right to this product, and the content of this product is a much larger question.
Yeah, and they're not going to have their lawyers all dig into, you know, Apple doesn't want to apply all their lawyers to figure out exactly what that is. They want your lawyers to do that.
Right.
and figure that out and then have a judge just tell them what to do.
Exactly.
And they don't want a vector for social engineering attacks either, where you can just go to them and say somebody's died and have a few pieces of paper. I mean, they want a process that's resilient as well.
Right.
It'd be nice if they decided to write up a formal policy of this is what we would expect in order to deliver this data, so that it doesn't seem as though they're being capricious or unprepared for this sort of eventuality.
The simple and easy solution is a password manager. I use LastPass. They've added in the new feature in 4.0 it's an emergency feature that lets somebody get access to your LastPass password, and then presumably in LastPass you've stored everything. You might as well put your will in there too. You can put everything you want in there. And then the process is clever because you in your LastPass settings say, all right, I will get an email when somebody requests this access, my wife or my lawyer requests this access, and I will have a certain amount of time to respond and say no. So you can say, don't give them access for 2 weeks. Let me find, before you contact me and then wait 2 weeks. I set it to like a half a day, because if I'm passed away, I mean, it's like a dead man switch.
Right.
If we send you an email and you don't respond, okay, we figure. The other thing they do is, and I use this too, is you can make a family shared folder and put everything in there that belongs, that everybody in the family should have access to.
And then you can, if you have email problems like me, where you just have so much email coming in and you're trying to manage it, you can set up an if this and that. have a little
if
light
I'm
in
dead,
your office turn red if someone
are you dead?
Going after
not
last
dead
pass.
Yet.
No.
But it is, and things might slip through the cracks. I mean, there's a lot of stuff, but your Facebook password, your Twitter password.
It's interesting to think about how you could sort of beef that up a little bit. Like for me, it would be, not only did I not respond to that email, but I have not posted to Twitter in an entire week.
I haven't had any activity on this IP address for an entire week. It would be really easy for someone to be on vacation and while they're on vacation, you know, because they didn't buy the good internet package on the cruise ship, that allowed the ne'er-do-well cousin to get access to
It's hard to think about like exactly how to future-proof all of that too. So you work on all this stuff because I've been thinking about it because I've been as a joke, and then it became more serious. I was thinking of putting like a little QR code, you know, somewhere like if found, return to here, but I can't figure out what to do with it. Like, do you send it to a web page? Yeah. Will that last? You know, that kind of thing. When you start thinking permanent, it's hard to think about what that would look like.
Somebody, I think it was Brian Brushwood, created a, didn't he do a website like if he, like that gets activated if he dies? And like for exactly that, like if
Does he play organ music?
It's a great idea. I might do that. If I don't tweet for 24 hours, I must be dead.
Leo, I just saw a Law and Order episode that it didn't turn out well, so don't do that.
Well, that is isn't that also the premise of Daniel Suarez's great novel, Damon?
Oh, big time.
Yeah.
And I love those books.
Yeah.
Amazing books.
A game developer has created this entire AI that goes into action upon his death. It's fascinating and a little scary as well. So I'm glad we have a Canadian on because App Store prices are going up.
Oh, yeah.
In Canada, and they say Apple says it's because of exchange rate fluctuations.
Yeah, I mean, the Bank of Canada was talking about that. I think we're down at 69 cents or something U.S., and they think it might go down to as little as 59 cents.
Wait a minute. The Canadian dollar is worth 69 cents now?
Something horrible like that. I'm not sure what the exact value is right now, but it's been going lower and lower, and there's all sorts of reasons for that tied, you know, to the oil industry and things like that. But these things do fluctuate. When the App Store launched, it was at par for Canada and the U.S. So it was a dollar U.S. and then a dollar Canadian.
Because they were close enough.
Absolutely. I think now it's $1.15, and I'm not sure what it'll go up to, but maybe $1.25. Apps are going to be easy. Things like software are going to be easy, but they were talking about how perception has to be handled. So, for example, they're thinking of making entirely different car models for Canada so that you can't just look across the border and see the price disparity. That's what they've done with Costco and with Walmart for years, is they put variant models of refrigerators or washing machines so you can't do direct comparisons. But it's getting to that point, and I think they're adjusting it in six or seven countries.
I know that Apple has a plan for developers to set prices in emerging markets just to get in that market. So apps are like can be like 20 cents instead of a buck. Do developers have input on what the Apple's going to charge in Canada, Israel, Mexico, New Zealand, Russia, Singapore, and South Africa? They set a price and those are automatically converted.
Yeah, there's no greater Canadian support package available to alleviate our burden.
Well, this happens all the time, and it can go in both directions. It could go down as well.
Yeah, and they usually wait for they don't adjust it every day. I mean, that would be.
I think they definitely try to put it off as long as they can because it obviously creates a lot of instability. But
typically, it's when a new product is launched. So, like when they launch the next iPhone, they'll adjust it again in the different countries. When they launch the next MacBook, the price will be adjusted in the different countries. So they'll eat the difference for a while, and that's why they do those massive hedge dealings. Right. They talk about on the conference calls.
Hey, should I speaking of new MacBooks, I should wait, right?
Anytime, you should always wait. Anytime there's a possibility of an Apple event, like in March.
I always want you to go ahead and buy them because you buy them and then they get
released. We haven't seen Skylake MacBooks yet.
Right?
No.
Skylake was only in the iMac as far as I can
remember. Okay. So, and Skylake would have benefits in a mobile platform.
Thunderbolt 3 would be awesome.
Thunderbolt 3 would be really awesome.
I think some PC laptops have shipped with Thunderbolt 3 already, and that's sort of what we're waiting for now with the Mac laptops.
So Skylake, and we've been it's funny, I just got off the phone with Ryan Schrout this morning right before the show because we're going to build the ultimate VR gaming machine, Overroom, on the new screensavers because we're getting our Oculus Rift in a few months, and I want to have it turns out none of the Windows machines I have are powerful enough to use it. So I have to build a new one. So I thought, well, if we're going to build a new one, let's build the ultimate virtual reality game machine. So one of the first decisions you make is which platform, Haswell or Skylake. The faster processors are available on Haswell. It's like with my Mac Pro. It was a Xeon, right? Mm-hmm. Faster processors are available. Actually, you know, I wonder.
This is a weird.
If I ran Windows on my Mac Pro, maybe it would be fast enough.
you should absolutely check. But it's a weird year because Intel's not doing TikTok like usual. They're doing TikTok Talk. So you're going to get Kaby Lake coming as well, which is built on the same process because it took so long to get it. to market. So do you wait for Kaby Lake? I mean, we don't know quite when it's coming yet.
Right. So that platform decision is can be a difficult one, but Skylake does have some real benefits for mobile, particularly, I think.
Yeah, it's the new architecture built on the process that was introduced with Haswell.
Right.
Not Haswell, sorry, Broadwell.
Broadwell. Haswell was a big jump for mobile as well, or was supposed to be, but I don't think really ended.
Yeah, Haswell was the architecture bump after the previous process. Right? Okay.
So, bottom line, we should see new MacBooks. I would bet we'll see new MacBooks.
It could be staged. So far, typically Apple has done some in March, some in June, and some Macs in September. And I think it was the MacBook and the MacBook Airs, I think, previously, or the other way around, and then the MacBook Pros. They've done it at WWC several years, the MacBook Pros, but any time between March and June is usually not safe.
Not safe.
Yeah. It's an unsafe time to buy.
Not venture into the water.
Well, I mean, if you care. Some people don't care. Like, I went ahead and bought a MacBook Pro the year before the MacBook came out because I knew that the MacBook wasn't going to have the graphics that I wanted.
Right.
So it didn't make a difference if it was going to get bumped or not because I knew basically what I needed. So if there's nothing in Skylake for you and nothing really in Kaby Lake, and for a lot of people that'll be true, you can take advantage of the sort of economy, the deals that you get as the platform ages out.
Yeah.
Also, if you need something, you need it.
Right.
And you have to be able to really think about that. I toasted my Mac Pro, my MacBook Pro in November, and I knew that I could maybe with the iPad Pro stick it out until March. But that seemed like a very, very bad way to go through life if I'm going to be spending 8 to 18 hours a day on this thing. And so you'll get by. It'll be fine.
Well, this is in fact, this is a 2012 laptop, this 15-inch, and it's fine. I'm not this is from mid 2012, so it's going to be about 4 years old. But that feels, truth is, I don't know if I would need to replace this. It's an i7. It's 8 gigabytes of RAM.
There will always be better. If you wait till March and buy it, the next year there'll be another bump. Maybe there'll be a speed bump, you know, 6 months later. There'll always be something better.
This was like kind of top of the line when I bought it. Mm-hmm. I have no reason to get a new one. I might have more reason if they change the form factor. Do you think that will happen?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think the MacBook is a big hint at where the direction Apple's going with laptops, the same way the MacBook Air was. But for me, for example, Thunderbolt 3 would be great because I've got an aging Thunderbolt display that's non-Retina and, you know, it doesn't have everything that I want on it. And the idea of a 5K Thunderbolt display that sort of has all the latest ports on the back and can do, maybe has, you know, a graphics boost for the computers built into it. Because you can start doing it with Thunderbolt. You can have graphics chips outside of the main chassis. There's all sorts of interesting things that just having that interconnect or the new USB-C design that also works with Thunderbolt that opens up for you. So for me, that would be a really interesting upgrade. But if we don't see that, then it probably won't be.
I have to admit, and I know it's probably becoming dead at some point, but the USB-C is really exciting. I'm on my little MacBook.
I love USB-C. I have more and more USB-C chargers emerging throughout my house.
The fact that it is it doesn't pop off when it gets pulled. Mm-hmm. As a father of two
You don't
kids,
like that.
I totally freaks me out.
Now, Griffin makes that USB-C.
I know.
Break
but even
away.
Then, just anything sticking out that can't be just bumped off, it literally has me. I charge it in my office. I won't take it out in the room. You know, it really, like, I just don't use my charger anywhere because I'm always afraid it's going to get bent. You know, and because, you know, it's something that gets kicked out all the time. And so it's just a. I thought that was kind of a stroke of genius that they had. I know Andy doesn't like the magnetic chargers very much, but I really do.
Yeah, they I like
magnetic chargers so long as they actually stay affixed to the device. And it's still just the name of my pain. But the advice that I always give, and it's just more and more sturdy every year, is that you shouldn't really buy new hardware unless you're very sure that it's either going to solve a problem or create an opportunity for you. And
Andy, you're so practical.
Well, no, I'm saying that's often gotten me, like, you know, you get that tingling in the back of your neck that says, oh, new MacBook. Oh my God. It's like, okay, Andy, settle down. Yes, you do have $1,000 that you could spend on this, but
Andy,
what is it going to do that you can't do with your current one? Or what is it going to, again, what problem does it solve? What opportunity does it create? That's the great thing though, is that also meant that I didn't have to hesitate twice about buying an iPad Pro because that was like
really fast answers to both of those questions. But yeah, I mean, don't think that just because it's going to give you an extra 2 or 3 hours of battery life, unless you are in the problem of you're always running out of battery and it's impossible for you to find an outlet where you need to. The fact that it's a faster processor, unless it can let you do something on this device that you can't do with your old one, that doesn't mean that it's stupid to buy this new version of it, but that at least should be a little bit of a cold shower to let you be a little bit more rational about what you're going to buy.
But what if I don't want to be rational?
Well, welcome to America.
It's not about need, it's about want.
Trump 2016.
Yeah, it really is true. I don't need a new Mac. I really don't. But, okay. So we were talking last week about Night Shift in iOS 9.3. You wrote a good explainer. Actually, Georgia wrote a good explainer about how it helps us sleep better. Now, Georgia's a sleep expert.
Yes.
So she's writing it from the point of view of somebody who really knows what they're talking about. It did have to do with blue light, right?
Yeah, it's super fascinating. So during the day, just like Superman and Supergirl, we are powered by the sun. And as we soak it in, it builds up melatonin in our system. And eventually that helps us tire. And the melatonin levels rise during the night. And that helps keep us asleep and get a good night's sleep. What the shorter wavelength blue light does builds up histamine, and that sort of not only negates the melatonin, but it makes us want to stay awake and do more things, and that interferes with our sleep level. So unfortunately, a lot of electronics, like computer displays, are towards the blue end of the spectrum, so we're soaking in that sort of light, especially if you use the devices within a couple hours of sleep or while you're in bed, you know, waiting to go to sleep. It's sending entirely the wrong signal to your body. So what this does with Night Shift is once you turn it on from about sunset on, it starts to shift the display towards the yellow. You can adjust how much from very subtle to almost like pirate parchment yellow. And that just means that when your eyes are looking at it, they're not soaking in those short wavelength blue lights anymore. And that helps you stay ready to fall asleep. Now, Georgia does point out that that's only part of it, because if you're playing stuff like highly addictive games or videos or social networking, the sort of immediate gratification and buzz you get from that can still help you stay awake and avoid, you know, good sleep hygiene. But this goes part of the way. So if you're still acting responsibly, you're not going to be doing anything self-defeating while reading a few things before you go to bed.
But it is not a panacea. Do not expect suddenly with iOS 9.3 to sleep like a baby.
I usually fall asleep right away, and that's like the end of my day is always like 10 or 15 minutes of just kind of going through Facebook or Flipboard. And
I think I've developed blue light immunity.
I think I have too.
Well, it's not immunity. It's like,
it's called whiskey.
How much better could it be if you didn't have that blue light sort of a thing? It's like, it's almost like a power bar in Street Fighter. Yeah, you're at half. You could probably be at 3/4 if you did it a little bit better.
The folks who do, go ahead, Annie.
I will just say that if you're not using a sleep tracker app, that might give you an insight into a problem that you need to solve pretty darn fast. I've been using one for the past 2 or 3 or 4 weeks, and that no amount of sensible advice was able to convince me to, when you go to bed, you're going to turn off every single screen. You're going to have the completely dark room. You're not going to have like a light on the hallway. You're going to have absolutely no distractions, and you're going to try not to do any work a half hour before you want to go to bed anyway. And only an app that gives you numbers that makes you want to beat your latest high score of a week of actually getting decent sleep is going to do that sort of stuff for you. But I'm glad that it's always fascinating when you sort of are able to look 100 years in the past and realize that, oh, so they didn't realize that this thing they were brushing their teeth with was actually deducting 18 IQ points out of their head. And they wondered why the entire population went insane. Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. So it's always interesting to think about, what is it about these screens that we're staring at every single day? What is it about these radios that we're working with every single day that we might not figure out was a problem until 50 years from now?
Now, which one do you use?
It's an Android app, of course. But it's a... I actually have it.
Sleep as Android.
Sleep plus for the Apple Watch is awesome. Yeah.
It's really great when you can pair it with an actual wearable. Yeah. Oh, come on, don't scroll back. That's why I scroll forward. You big oaf. Yeah, I think it's Sleep Plus Plus. It's actually, I've got a whole page of like health apps, and so you just tap this button when you're ready to go to sleep.
Yeah.
And
I did a dumb thing. I bought a USB charger hub, 5-port charger with a Type-C charger on it, by the way, for the bedroom. It has a very bright LED, which turns out to be blue. So I'm actually beaming blue light into my eyes all night long now.
I actually have a fix for that.
What's that?
Gaff tape.
Yeah, I did. That's what I did. I taped over it.
A lot of people do that with Apple.
That was so bright. I thought, why do they put that on there? The thing is lighting up the room.
There's very few things that can't be fixed with enough
gaff tape. Is there anything it can't do?
Loud children.
The folks who make F-Lux, which is a program that kind of started this for Android, had a response to Apple's announcement. Apple announced this week they've joined our fight to use technology to improve sleep. Blah, blah, blah. We're proud that we invented this. We've done this for 7 years.
Welcome, Apple. Really?
Really. Now we call on Apple to allow us to release F-Lux to iOS. I guess they've been trying to. That's interesting, and Apple has prevented them from putting it on iOS.
Well, the APIs aren't public, so the way to control the color cast of the display and things like that, it's not publicly available yet. The same way brightness, I don't think, is publicly available for a long
time. Bad news, Michael and Lorna. I don't think Apple's going to really do this for you. I have used F-Lux on Android. I don't like it. It turns my screen kind of reddish. I don't want that. Have you used it on iOS 9.3? Have you used Night Shift?
Yes.
Does it turn the screen an appreciably yellow color? Or?
So if you go to display and brightness now, you have a new group of settings in there, and you can, mine is set to automatically do it, but I can turn it on now. And what it'll do is, the basic one is very hard to tell. It's just a very subtle yellow cast to it, and it's almost impossible to see. But you can turn that up to full-on sort of, again, pirate leather.
Pirate leather is right. It looks like leather. Yeah.
Called arg leather.
But the real one is subtle, and it doesn't just change. So it gradually, as sunset happens, it gradually gets a little bit more yellow, and then as it gets closer to sunrise, it gradually gets a little bit back to the blue cast.
Yeah.
And you can set it to be, like the default is turn it on, turn it off. You can set it to automatic based on sunrise, sunset for your location, or you can set it custom. So if you say, I just want it to be from 10 p.m. to 7 a.m., you could set that up too. It's pretty clever.
I feel like the whole thing's bogus, but if Georgia says it's real, I'll defer to her.
Well, she'll say if I read a book, gadgets down.
If I do read a book that's one of the features of being very, very dyslexic, is that if I read a book before I go to sleep,
knocks you right out
within 7 or 8 minutes.
Yeah, I'm like, me too.
My whole brain.
And I'm not dyslexic, but it's relaxing. I can never get past the first page.
I get that.
I used to read to my kids, and I'd fall asleep before they did.
Yes,
they'd actually elbow me. Said, "Daddy," because I'd start saying, because I would go in this hypnagogic state where I'd start, or saying weird things. The frog and the elephant rode. And they say, "Daddy." We're not done yet. Sorry.
And again, it's not a binary state. It's just the quality of your sleep. And maybe it's only 10% better. And maybe your sleep is good enough that the 10% won't be a difference. But if it's already bad, it can help you get better.
Every time, any industry comes up, hey, what do you got? We figured it out. Here's the thing. You put it on your eyes and the light gets blue. And I don't know. I don't buy it.
There's science at the bottom of their response.
There's science. Somewhere.
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw there was a link. There was links to why it's going to prevent cancer.
Oh, well. I was such fans of them before that.
Right up to that point. Handwriting recognition on the iPad. Interesting article in Macworld from Michael Simon. He says, hey, you got a pencil. Can handwriting recognition be far behind?
Right.
Well, do we want that?
Yes.
It works so well on the Newton.
Yes, but I don't know
Microsoft
how.
Ink has been good.
Yeah, I would love to see it as a keyboard app. I'm not sure how Apple could integrate it into the iOS UI without screwing up a whole bunch of things.
I've used it. Samsung Notes have it. Of course, Windows has it. You use it. It's kind of cool, and then you stop using it.
I think fundamentally the problem is that my handwriting is so bad.
Maybe that's my problem.
That it doesn't
that's
do.
That's okay. I don't think we necessarily even need to see magically handwriting converted into text. What I would love to do is to be able to take handwritten notes, and then that becomes part of the metadata. Like this is the software's guess as to what text this represents, so I can search Evernote or search OneNote for these notes. One of the things that surprisingly I find that I'm using the iPad Pro for a lot is handwritten notes, because there's just so many ways in which If you're taking in a really large free flow of information from a speaker, say, you don't necessarily know if he's made a point on page 8 of your notes that loops back to page 2 of your notes. And it's impossible to, even if you're using a great app like Omni Outlander, it's hard to sort of skip back and add things where it needs to go. But with handwritten notes, you can put little symbols on, or you put arrows and circles and, you know, little doodles that really help you out, and scribble things back in the margins of things where you have room for it. And it's actually, when I'm on the phone in a briefing, I'm typically now taking notes on my iPad Pro with a pencil instead of just typing it. And I would love to see that I'd like to see the doors unlocked so that developers could take advantage of this if it's not necessarily something that's going to be hardwired into iOS.
Mm. I think the thing is it's like that. You see in Korea, I guess they have some input devices that are really set up. It was back when it was like K9 or whatever, and they'd set up the input devices for kids so that they could, because they were so good at that and they were better at that than actually writing. Yeah. And I think that we're kind of moving down that path where I just don't know if my kids will just do that much.
T9.
I can't even fill out a check anymore.
I remember T9. That.
I can remember T9. Yeah, T9. That was like that would predict what you were going to type.
But they were so good at it. Yeah. They have the devices like in the 8 or like whatever the kiosk was built for that. So they just use their thumb because they were better at it.
Yep.
I tried to fill out checks the other day and I couldn't remember how to write because it had been so long.
I know. You know, I can only write. It's gone from, I used to not be able to write cursive and now I don't remember lowercase. So everything is just all uppercase.
Wow.
And so now I do uppercase and capital.
You guys are worried about blue light?
Right.
You can't write anymore.
You know, it's funny. I uppercase, and then uppercase is actually larger uppercase. You know, like I just... like that's all I write. It's like, you know,
someone else,
like, they were like, what's the uppercase? I was like, just the larger letters are uppercase. That's how I do it.
You guys are not ready for the coming apocalypse.
Where's my keyboard, man? I need a keyboard.
So Apple admits, I guess, that there is some battery percentage bug in iPhone 6S and 6S Plus, the battery percentage not going down.
Yeah, so if you meddled with your clock, and a lot of people do this because they play time-based games, like if you play Candy Crush, it's way too cheap by just adjusting the clock. And that apparently in iOS 9 was screwing up the battery percentage meter.
So it wasn't happening to everyone. It was just happening to people who were...
If you manually changed the clock on your iPhone, it would cause problems with the battery percentage. Oh.
Yeah. If your iPhone 6S or a 6S Plus battery percentage doesn't update, if you change the time manually or change time zones while traveling, it could happen. You might notice the battery percentage doesn't update. So just restart your phone.
Yeah.
Or set time and date automatically.
Yes.
And then you won't have this problem either.
So turn it off and back on again.
Free-to-play gamers out there, Leo, who are suffering from this.
That's why it's free-to-play, because I'm still in 1958. All right. And good news, just what you've been waiting for. Microsoft says we're going to release the Windows Phone keyboard for your iPhone.
I thought to myself, I was like, really? Why are we even you telling me that?
Microsoft is doing a lot for iOS now.
It's for the legions of Windows Phone users.
Who want to switch.
Yeah.
They have a swipe feature, but Swipe has a swipe feature if you want to use a third-party keyboard with a swipe feature. I don't know.
But they were updating their apps today, and apparently they're going to just go increasingly into the iOS ecosystem.
Right.
I mean, they did Office on iOS first. Right. They really believe in developing cross-platform now.
They also believe that their Windows Phone platform is dead. And if they want to be on mobile, they better do it on somebody else's time.
Well, they believe that their Windows Phone platform is dead, and they believe that they're now running Windows 10 on all devices.
Right.
With some justification. I mean, I'm really fascinated by these sort of moves too, because it seems like a not terribly expensive way to evangelize your platform sort of infests another platform. Just like I think that once Apple allows independent developers to create their own watch faces, I think you will see companies like Omega and Hermes and all these high-end brands figuring out that they're probably not going to sell a $3,000 watch to a sport Apple Watch customer, but you can sell them a $3 watch face that has all of the pizzazz of Omega design, and then they'll start to like that so much that when they're no longer 20, 21, 22 years old, and now they're 30, 31, 32 years old, and maybe they do have enough money to go buy a nice watch, they're going to want this wonderful Omega design that they've fallen in love with. So it's interesting to see how evangelism can penetrate pretty much any cultural barrier.
I think Satya Nadella has said too, and I think this is also true, we want to be where our customers are. And if our customers are using iOS, and they are, then we want to make sure that we're there for them. That makes sense when it comes to Office, for sure.
Apple was putting iBooks into Pinterest because that's where people are seeing them. I mean, we're going to see this increasingly happen. It just depends on what you think are the most beneficial platforms to you.
Do you know about this gatekeeper vulnerability? Do you want to address this, Renee?
I didn't have time to look at it. Okay. If it's the same one, then it was just basically the way our gatekeeper was architected, and they have to do a lot of re-architecture to sort of shore it up.
And the funny thing that it sounds like is that the researchers, from what I read in this article, the researchers reported it, and the way Apple fixed it was just to block where the research was coming from. They're like, well, we'll just block that so that they see that it was fixed. And it's probably that it requires a lot more work, but it was just kind of an interesting way to fix it was just to block the places that the
It's an interesting exploit. From. Basically, as you know, if you have Gatekeeper turned on, if you can't just run an unsigned application. You have to manually open it and run it. That's still true, but what it turns out is that a signed application can run an unsigned application. So a malicious attacker could have a signed application that then launches a dangerous unsigned application. I don't think that's a huge flaw because Apple still knows who the signed application is. So if a signed application is running unsigned malware, well, they could still trace it back to the original creator, which, frankly, is the whole point of signing. So I'm not sure. Anyway, the fellow who Synax security researcher Patrick Wardle, who disclosed this in September, said that Apple hasn't dealt with it yet. They reverse after the release of the patch. He noticed the actual vulnerability wasn't addressed. The company just blacklisted the binaries Wardle was using to demonstrate the issue. You know, I guess you could see attack scenarios, so it needs to be fixed, but I don't think it's going to be a
massive. And it's going to be a process because there are certain things that are just architecturally tough to do, and they're going to put out as many band-aids as they can at first. And they have to make sure that the fix doesn't break a lot of other stuff, and especially when it's a gatekeeper level, if it stops signed apps running. Like we saw when they were just trying to move to SHA-2 for the App Store, how many things that broke. So I think they're going to be careful about rolling out big architectural changes, but they're going to try to patch as much as they can as they do it.
And finally, from Scooter X, in the category of how long will this product be on the market before Apple decides to sue them out of business? This is Scooter X says he just got his today from MilkModern.com, the Steve Jobs One More Pin. It's a pin with a face of Steve Jobs and the word Jobs on it, which maybe gets them off the hook.
It's limited to just 100.
Just 100, and they're only $9. You know, I wouldn't mind having... Oh, I get it. That's the pin, not that. Yes. This is the pin. So it's Jobs' head on your jeans.
Yeah. Or on your suit jacket.
Actually, I would like that. You got that, Scooter X? I'd like to get that. That actually is pretty sweet.
New American flag with Steve Jobs variant?
Yeah, forget the American flag. I'm going to put Steve Jobs' head.
See, there you go.
Then Donald Trump will punch me in the nose.
Sold. You better hurry up because we just talked about it on the show.
And there's only 100. We've just sold them all out, I'm sure. I just bought two. Update cart, check out. Stop it. Don't. Last pass. Phil. Oh.
Your order will ship in 3 months.
You think it's back ordered? They're only going to print. Oh, my God.
Everyone knows that you're racing. So
you're supposed to order before you tell them.
So now everyone's racing. So just imagine there's like 1,000 people that are like typing as fast as they can.
They can type faster than me. I can only type in uppercase letters now. No, that's you. Okay, wait a minute. shipping or handling, subtotal, pay with PayPal. Oh, man, where's my dongle? What a time to lose your dongle. Oh, crap.
We have a show title.
What are you going to do with your dongle if they get rid of the headphone jack?
Oh, that's a good question. Wait a minute. They're going to send me a text.
Okay. Where's my phone?
Send me a text.
This is some quality MacBreak.
I knew I should have turned off two-factor authentication.
It's quality radio.
Let's just see. Can I get it in time? Securely logging you in. Pay with PayPal. Pay now.
Enters the frame.
Well, it looks like I...
Nuzzles Alex's cheek.
Thank you. Your order has been received. But now I'm going to get a... I got one for you.
Thank you.
Now I'm going to get a notice that says, we took your money, but we can't give you your...
By the time your transaction...
Oh, look. They also sell a leather watch. a leather...
Ooh. Unfortunately, we've already been sued. You didn't order it fast enough.
Yeah, exactly. I'm really not trying to beat everybody else. I'm trying to beat Apple. All right, folks. Time for a break, and we shall continue on with your picks of the week. So prepare your picks. Get those picks ready. Meanwhile, I want to tell you a little bit about Squarespace.com, and this is one for the sophisticate. Squarespace is for everybody. It's the greatest place to make a website, and I just have to, you know, Jason Calacanis said this. I thought it was so right on. He said, you'd be nuts nowadays to go out and have a bespoke, custom-made website. It's just hundreds of thousands of dollars. I know, because we did it. And where you go to Squarespace, and for nothing, you're getting these top-of-the-line designer templates with the best state-of-the-art engineering, so you got mobile responsive design. Looks great on any screen. So the back end is all there. It never goes down. It's the best hosting. He said it's just nuts to, you know, go get a custom-built site, because you can get a custom-built site that looks beautiful, professional, for so much less at Squarespace.com. Whether you're a photographer and you want the perfect portfolio, a band that wants a great site for your band, performance calendar. They have, you could sell your music online. It's just awesome. A professional blog, an online store. In fact, every Squarespace template has commerce built in, and not one of them crap looking shopping cart that you tack onto your site. It doesn't look like your site anymore. It matches the aesthetics of your site. It is a perfect complement to your site. Now, of course, you don't have to do any coding for this. You don't even have to know your CSS from a hole in the ground. You just click and point your way to a beautiful-looking website. But if you want to get geeky, they do have a Squarespace developer platform that is amazing. And this, you know, you get full control over HTML, CSS, JavaScript. There is a JSON API. So you have a CMS that you can actually call. You could start with one of the beautiful existing Squarespace templates, and they're so great. But you could also start with a base template and do your own thing. Once you register as a developer, flip the developer toggle. You can even use SFTP or Git and do it that way too. Wow. I love Squarespace. They have made that's my site, leoville.com. I'm using the cover page feature on Squarespace, which is awesome. By the way, with an annual purchase, you get a free custom domain. Power your business with Squarespace Commerce, 24/7 support. I just love it. Start your free trial, Squarespace.com. But do, if you buy, use the promo code MacBreak, and you'll get 10% off. And, of course, show your support for the show. Squarespace. You should. Time for our picks of the week. Let's start with you. You're right here. You're in the... Oh, you're looking at Saddleback Leather.
I was.
I got you started.
During the end. I'm like, oh, look at that.
What do I get my bag? So nice. I get my bag on Saturday. You can see if you like
great.
It.
No, it sounds great.
But that's their camera thing.
Yeah, that's camera thing.
But they don't have partitions, so you'd have to make your own
stuff. Yeah.
Pick and pull. You taught me about pick and pull.
I wouldn't put pick and pull into a leather case, though. Oh. You have to make it handcrafted with real wool.
Oh.
Like wool.
Wool.
I don't know.
Wool. Use wool.
That's my story. I'm sticking to it. So, I grew up in the country. Uh-huh. And on the farm.
You're a country guy?
And for us, knots, you know, we used a lot of different knots. Cheap shank, half hitch,
I actually love knots.
I love knots.
I wish I knew knots better.
So I was like, man, it would just really be great to teach my son all these knots. And some of them I can remember and some of them I don't remember as well and everything else. And so
you need a knot app.
I was like, there's got to be an app for this.
Yeah.
And so I bought all, I did, this the service that I do for the MacBreak, I bought all the knots. Apps. So I just bought them all.
Just to see which is the best.
So you decide which one is
and
the best.
And now we know which one is the best. Which?
In my opinion is Knots 3D. So Knots 3D, this animates the knots. So this is exactly the thing that I wanted to do, which is you have 3D knots, so you can really see what they're doing. A lot of other ones have
time-lapse,
video.
Very hard to figure out how to tie something.
But the 3D aspect of this really works. And so you can actually take it and scroll it, and you can scroll back and forth and watch the knot kind of forming.
Oh.
So you can go, oh, what is that? I mean, you can, you know, there's a and there's like, oh, I don't know how many knots. See, look at that. So, and you can drag on it, and it'll show like how it's going to.
You kind of need that, don't you?
It's really, it could be a little more design to it, you know, like they could work on that. But as far as the functionality of this, and there's a little 360 where it'll rotate. Now, I wish you could animate it. I couldn't figure out a way to get it to animate the knot building while rotating in 3D.
In 3D. You should help them with that. Is there a way to do that?
Well, they know more about it than I do at this point. I mean, they're doing a great job inside of it. But there's just about any, I mean, I couldn't think of a knot that I couldn't find in there.
92
I don't even know what
total
you'd use a
knots.
Monkey fist for. But anyway, but it gives you a little explanation of what that is. And it's just, and it's using, I think it came from a classic knots manual that they actually kind of based it on.
That's
but
awesome.
Anyway, if you're into knots, I know it's obscure, but there's a high correlation of geeks and knots for some reason.
Oh, yeah, because it's topology. Technical. That's why.
And all of them, for the most part, are utilitarian. You know, there's some reason that someone built that knot.
The Blake's Hitch.
And used it often enough that it ended up in a book.
I want to do the monkey's fist. That looks good. By the way, they have it for the iPad, too, which is probably what you should do, because then you get the big screen.
Anyway, it's great. Great little app. And it's the.
You'd like to facilitate your use of cordage in the field. This is
well,
for you.
The funny thing is that I think that it is. This is where I think we're on our way with education and so on and so forth, is that there's going to be stuff like this for everything you want to learn.
Yeah.
That keeps on getting better, where it's just this interactive way to kind of put it together.
I was talking to. Lisa's cousin, it does truck repair.
Mm-hmm.
He drives one of those big tow trucks out to the truck to fix it, right? And so he's really quite expert in this. I mean, he's brilliant. And he said, you know what's been a huge boon for me? YouTube.
Right.
I said, wait a minute. You can find, like, obscure, difficult repair jobs that you don't know on YouTube? He said, everything is on YouTube.
It's crazy.
There's nothing not on you. There's the monkey's fist. That's my new knot. If you see monkey fists tied in all of our cordage around the studio, you will know Leo's been there. I don't know what good it's for, but it looks cool.
I'll show you how to do it.
You know, because you're a sailor.
Ex-sailor, yeah.
Jason Cleanthes, our producer, was in the Navy.
Ooh. Yeah, you can either get the app or just sign up for 4 years with the U.S. Navy, and they'll teach you everything you need to know.
Do they teach you knots in the Navy?
Yeah, in boot camp, yeah.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Like you're going to be tying up the boat?
Well, because it... If you haven't identified your class yet, if you haven't identified the
direction
you want to go,
maybe you will be tying up the boat.
You might be a bosun's mate, and you might be tying up the boat.
Oh, they still have bosun's mates that tie up the boat?
Somebody's got to do it.
Do you know the monkey fist?
Yes.
Do you know
what it's, one in years.
Do you know what it's for?
It's a good weight on the end of the line for throwing a line.
Ah, perfect.
There we go.
I throw lines all the time.
Yeah, when I'm throwing a line, this is going to be the one I use.
You can even put a weighted core inside to help you out.
Jason, I don't need the app. I got you. Let's have knot class a little later on.
See, but the key is
it's like lock,
when you want to have the app, and you want to impress Jason, because I know that's important to you.
There you go.
That what you can do is secretly learn them,
there
and then
go.
Just do them in front of him.
Here's
very
a clove hitch.
Yeah, exactly.
They make a great keychain.
You need a clove hitch? Yep. I got one. Oh, you know what? That's where I know this from. I had a friend, an elderly gentleman, who would tie these for us as bookmarks. That's where I know that from.
If you do it with a small enough thread, you can make real intricate,
neat,
delicate versions.
Your pick, that by the way, $1.99, iOS, but also Android, Nook, and Kindle, apparently. That's nice. Mr. Rene Ritchie, your pick of the week.
So I've got a tip this week, and I sat down, and I did this originally, but then I went down and redid it again for iOS 9, and it's basically all the shortcuts that they've built into Safari for the iPhone. Some of these work on the iPad, too, but primarily if you're on the iPhone and you want to make your browsing faster, the Safari team at Apple has built in a ton of little gesture shortcuts, and people know the basic ones, like tap at the top of the screen to go all the way back to the top, but you can hold down on the back button to get a list of your history going backwards, hold down on the forward button to get a list of your of your history going forward. You can hold down on the bookmark button to get a bunch of quick bookmark options. You can hold down on the reload button to reload the page in the desktop version or to reload it without the content blockers. There's just all these little things you could do. There's find on page, there's print to PDF. A ton of really quick ways to get through your browsing on the iPhone, just built right in. People know already, flicking away web pages, reordering web pages. But you can also, for example, scroll down and see the bookmarks, the iCloud bookmarks on your computer and swipe to close those remotely. So if you left home, you didn't want a certain tab open, you could just flick up, swipe that, delete it, and it'll disappear from the Safari browser on your desktop. And there's a whole bunch of these things. I've got, I think, 16 of them here for people. But all of these have made... It just becomes muscle memory after a while. It makes you so efficient. Almost everything now does peek and pop, too. If you have an iPhone 6S or an iPhone 6S Plus, the shortcuts that they give you, the suggested sites, the bookmarks, the reading links, all of those you can peek at before you commit to going to the page. So you can very quickly see all the content and decide which ones you really want to go to. So if you do use Safari on iPhone a lot, this is just a really nice way to speed up everything that you do on it.
That's the real mark of a power user. Somebody yes. who just goes, never takes their hands off the keys.
And yeah, suddenly, just goes right through it.
You got a monkey's nut. And Inako, your turn.
Going back to a topic from a couple of weeks ago, still looking for like really good like Apple Pencil cases. And some people, I recommended this tip a couple of weeks ago, where thanks to my friend Trish, that you buy a set of like kids' chopsticks. And it will come in a lot because they will carry it in a lunchbox. It comes in this really cool case that happens to be like 18. The chopsticks tend to be 18 centimeters long, which is about almost exactly the same length as an Apple Pencil. And so you wind up with this perfect Apple Pencil case. And so
you need to buy more pencils now to accommodate all the cases you have.
Now that some of them are ready. And so these, you can find them on eBay, you can find them on Amazon, anything that's designed for chopsticks that are 18 centimeters long, will work almost perfectly. But I now have a new, like, favorite sort of not intended to hold Apple pencil cases, pencil case. What you do is, this is a little bit more DIY than buy this thing off of eBay and just take out the chopsticks and put this thing in here. What you do is you buy a Lucite tube that is 3/4 inch in diameter with an inside diameter of 1/2 inch. You cut it to about little over 7 inches. And then you have, it's the exact right thing for the Apple Pencil. Now, how do you keep it in there? Well, also from the same, also on eBay, you can buy these little vinyl plastic caps for 3/4 inch tubes. So you put that on one end, you put your Apple Pencil in, and you put the other cap on the other end, and you wind up with this actually quite attractive sort of like futuristic Star Wars almost level Apple Pencil case that's almost exactly the right size, almost exactly the right length, and it's pretty darn cool. And it'll protect the thing. It'll make sure that the tips don't get bounced out. The caps stay on securely. I buy these tubes for about $7. The caps are about $2, and you can easily like get enough for three for like less than $20. Some of these sellers will cut it to length for you if you tell it how long. Some of them also have them in different colors, so you can get like a clear red or a translucent yellow or something like that. But I think that the having it just this black and clear thing just actually. Is I think Johnny Ive wouldn't approve, but he wouldn't disapprove so much that he'd drive a truck through my house. So this is now my favorite solution for that because I just enjoy it. And also it's good for pretty much like every other kind of stylus you have. I thought I had like
is it TSA approved?
Well, they can look through it as long as it doesn't hold that much liquid. So here is like you can also I also have the stylus for my loaner Surface Pro 4 on this thing. And it's a little bit too long for this. So I could trim it down a little bit, but see, it just nice storage. You can put it in your pocket. You can put it wherever you want.
Well, Alex is a believer.
I love it.
Child's pencil case.
I got the child's chopstick one with the little bunny rabbits on it. But I'm looking for other.
I like the bunny rabbits.
I found another one of these, which is, I don't know what make this is, but this happens to be like the best one I've found. It comes with a little plastic insert for the chopsticks, but you can pull that out completely. So I bought a second one of those. But I also have like a couple of extra of these tubes I'd be happy to send you.
Please do. I have one of those.
And you too, Renee, if you like. And you too.
Awesome. Thank you.
Awesome.
And you get one. And you get one. And you get one.
Before we know it, it's going to be on Amazon.
I'm the sort of financial league where I can give people free hollow plastic tubes.
Look for Andy Notko's tubes on Etsy.com.
Give me a little side business. It's not bad. Awesome. Andy, during his day job, though, writes for the Chicago Sun-Times, an excellent journal of good repute out of the city of the broad shoulders. Thank you so much for being here. To the world. Although he is in the city of narrow shoulders.
We're the hub of the universe, which is not an arrogant thing for Bostonians to call themselves at all.
The hub of the universe.
It's cold enough that we can wear our like main hunting guide cosplay, but not so cold that we have to huddle in underground bunkers for fear of the ice giants coming to kill us all.
That's what they do in Winnipeg, and yes. That's where Renee Ritchie is. He and the ice giants.
Ymir, the frost giant king, is right down the street.
Thanks for joining us. iMore.com, great resource for everybody looking for information about Apple, but also tips and tricks and tools. It's really a fabulous site. And, of course, the podcast like Debug, just great. iMore.com. Stay warm, Renee. I hope you're...
Thank you.
How long in Winnipeg?
Until Friday.
Is there a direct flight from Montreal?
Yes, thankfully, Air Canada. And it even had Wi-Fi this time, so we're slowly inching our way into the 21st century.
Nice. The Winnipeg Express.
Yes.
All bought. Alex Lindsay is here. He is, of course, from Pixel Core. You can follow him on the Twitter, LINDSAY.
AY.
It's an AY Lindsay, not an EY Lindsay.
That's correct.
And that's probably the best place to figure out what he's up to because he tweets.
We're working on stuff.
Are you?
Yeah.
Nothing to announce.
Website, nothing yet.
Nothing to announce.
But soon.
Yeah. Want to thank the members of the North Coast Mac Users Group for stopping by. What's your website? ncmug.org. Of course, because it's nonprofit. ncmug.org. Great. And if you're in the Sonoma County area, the North Coast area, Mendocino, Napa, you should find out about it. Support your local user group. They're really a great resource. You never know when you're going to need them. It's also a great way to support other Mac users in your area because they come to the user group and say, help me. And don't forget, if you want to get our newsletter, if you want the complete set, our first edition comes out Sunday. So quickly, hie thee to twit.tv/newsletter and subscribe using your email address. We promise we will never give anyone else your email address, and we will only send you one newsletter a week and nothing else unless I die. Then I'll stop tweeting, but I will send you one last post in the newsletter. twit.tv/ that's kind of morbid. Yeah. twit.tv/newsletter. We thank you all for being here. You can join us in studio just like they did by emailing tickets at twit.tv. You can also watch live, twit.tv/MBW, every Tuesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 2100 UTC. If you can't make it live, don't worry. We have on-demand audio and video always available after the fact. But websites, one place to go, twit.tv/MBW. We do have links there that you can add to your iTunes and an RSS feed. But, you know, easiest way to do it, as somebody in the North Coast Mac Users Group said, I listen on my phone. Just use your favorite podcatcher. Overcast is a good choice. Pocket Cast. There's a lot of them. And, of course, Apple's podcast app. Or Stitcher and Slacker. Or the apps on your Roku or your Apple TV. There's Twit everywhere. Make sure you subscribe, and we'll see you next week. A Mac Break Weekly. Now get back to work, because break time is over.